From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about beginnings and endings and moving on to the next phase of life. It's graduation time. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Congratulations to all of our recent graduates out there, high school, kindergarten, college, whatever else you might be graduating from. It's the time of year for graduations, and we thought that it would be fun to talk about some graduation-related words.
First, we have a couple of little minor things. This is one. Kathy, could you post the headline? Maybe this is more a sign of our times. We were talking about commas. Now, headlines usually don't have commas anyway, but it's really interesting. Look at this sentence, Fletcher. Do you want to read it?
I'm not there yet, Ross.
Fletcher, do you want to sense what Kathy's posting?
I'm trying to send the vibes, man. But okay.
All right, here we go. Let's see. It says, ex-Iowa school leader who was in the U.S. illegally sentenced to 2 years.
Okay, here's what I read it as immediately. Of course, I, you know, later got it, but for a second I read it as the ex-school teacher was illegally sentenced.
Oh,
not was
sure.
In the U.S. illegally. Isn't
yes.
that interesting?
Yes. I mean, you know, the only reason probably that I read it correctly is because we're so used to being, you know, people talking about people being in the U.S. illegally right now.
Yes, of course.
But if that weren't always at the top of my mind, I might have read it the same way you did, Ross. That's really interesting.
It is interesting. It's also interesting because when I read the headline itself on the feed, the U.S. and illegally were separated onto two lines.
Oh, that would make it even more so.
Ex-Iowa school teacher who was in the U.S., next line, illegally sentenced to 2 years.
Yeah.
And I immediately thought, yeah, I guess, you know, one of those cases of, you know, ICE or something illegal, you know.
I gotta say, though, because the first thing I did say to Ross is, I worked in TV news when I was I was in my early 20s, so it wasn't real. But having done it, I always have a problem when people critique, though, headlines and stuff, because you're doing it fast, you have a limited space, like as Ross said, you can't use commas and stuff, and I always get a little irritated when people go, like, it's sort of ambiguous, it's like, well, you know, you write it,
yeah.
You
Although,
know what I mean?
In this case, I would, ex-Iowa school teacher in the U.S. illegally sentenced to 2 years.
I'm not sure that fixes it, really.
That doesn't work.
Okay, let me just read it out. Ex-Iowa school leader in the U.S. illegally. No, you're right. You're right.
In the U.S. illegally sentenced to 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is a tough one, actually, Ross. You found a toughie.
Fletcher, we have another quick grammar tricky. We've talked about this before. This is like a little SAT quiz, just because of you, to see if you really deserve to graduate. We're going to move on to graduate.
Oh, so this is the final exam before he graduates? So
this is the final one exam before he graduates.
I mean, I still have nightmares about this, where I have to be back in high school because somehow I didn't graduate.
Yeah, I do too. I have those.
I get the ones where we all get them. The one where you suddenly go, oh my God, I forgot to go to class all year.
Yeah, I have that too. Yeah. I still have it. It's math class for me. I forgot, and we have all these math problems.
And then I have the nude. I'm nude in class, and I'm thinking, how could I not have worn clothes?
I never have that one.
Oh, you don't? I have the nude dream a lot. It's very upsetting. Okay. I gave him the sentence, Ross.
All right, here it is. Having become frustrated trying to solve difficult problems, no colleagues were nearby to share ideas.
Okay, just tell us what's wrong with that, and then we'll move on anything wrong with
that. Well, having become frustrated trying to solve difficult problems, no colleagues were nearby to share ideas. The colleagues were frustrated? Did they all leave? Did they all leave because they were trying to solve difficult problems? This is confusing.
Let's look at the sentence. Repeat it again. Having become frustrated to solve difficult problems, no colleagues were nearby to share ideas. Now, sentences usually have a subject, right? So what's the subject of this sentence?
Well, it has to be
Fletcher was saying.
Yeah, it has to be the colleagues because there's no other person.
So is that correct?
No. I mean, Now I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, somebody was frustrated trying to solve difficult problems and wanted some help, but there were no colleagues
right.
nearby.
You got it, Fletcher.
Oof. Where did this come from?
I think it's a Duke University of Practice test.
I see.
Okay, to rewrite it, we could rewrite it as, having become frustrated to try to solve difficult problems, I missed having colleagues nearby to consult or to talk with or something.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't.
I is the subject.
I probably just wouldn't start the sentence that way.
No, I would think, like, I was trying to solve difficult problems and got frustrated because no colleagues were nearby to share ideas.
That's right.
I think we should move on to graduation.
Well, Fletcher passed. He did pass.
Thank you. I'm glad to have finally passed high school, college, whatever I just passed.
The hardest SAT writing and language questions.
Very nice.
That came from.
Very nice.
According to Duke. So let's start with graduation, since you're going to do it. Ross, can you hum Pomp and Circumstance, please?
Kathy, I can't do it. You know me, I'm off key on everything.
You're
I can't even
singer.
Hum on
You're
key.
The singer, Kathy.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
True, I know, but I want to share.
Kathy can hum it in the background while I ask you the question. The first word is graduation.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks. That's okay, a good one to start with.
Okay, we're just actually curious, but this is sort of interesting. Is the origin related to a word for steps, a word for ending, or a word for chair?
Oh, steps are nice. Like there's maybe a gradation, which is like a graduation. Ending, that seems too easy. Chair, I will go with chair.
Fletcher, you were right the first time.
Oh, it was the steps with the...
It's steps.
Yeah.
And gradation was a... My heart sank when you said gradation, because that's brilliant. That's exactly it.
Oh, cool.
Gradation, you're moving up a step. Exactly. And it comes from Latin gradus, which means a step.
Oh, wow.
So you're
it's
stepping
so funny.
Up.
I would never have... I mean, when you hear the explanation, it seems so logical, but I never think of graduation as in gradual or gradations in temperatures or measurements. Mm-hmm. I never made that connection mentally.
Yeah, we don't... I mean, well, we do think of a graduation as sort of an ending, don't we? I mean, it's the end of high school or it's the end of college.
We do.
We don't exactly think about it as taking the next step. I mean, they always, you know, all the convocation speakers and everything tell you that, but nobody really believes it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. Actually, it was funny because as a kid, I always thought, boy, once you graduate from high school, everything is easy. You know, you're an adult. God, did I learn. Then I got to college. Well, that's it. And then, you know, well, whatever. I don't know.
That still hasn't ended, has it?
No.
Okay, next we have is commencement.
Commencement, sure.
When did this word, meaning obviously a beginning, start being used as to explain a graduation ceremony? We're giving you centuries.
Okay.
We're making it broad. The 1700s, the 1900s, or the 1800s?
Oh.
Commencement.
I think it's probably the 1900s, the 20th century.
No.
It's not.
But he's actually surprisingly close. I thought it was, I mean, it's the 1800s.
Okay.
But I would have thought it was earlier, actually, on that one.
I would have thought somehow either it was way earlier or it was more recent. 1800s. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously lots of universities were popping up in the 1800s. But but what's the deal? Why did that come about then?
The word itself, I mean, commencement meaning a beginning or something coming into existence, was entered the English language in the late 13th century. Mm-hmm. The school graduation ceremony, mind you, was attested by 1850. And it was the ceremonies when bachelors and masters went on a stage and got their diplomas. It was like, that. There's your commencement. But the interesting thing in terms of older, Ross, you were saying that I have a listing in here saying that commencement in the sense of, quote, entrance upon the privileges of a master or doctor in the university. We forget that that was a thing, like becoming a master of university. It's not just getting your degree back then, you know, but that was from the late 14th century.
That's exactly where I was guessing when we did this, when we were going over it. That's where I guessed initially. Because it's like com, which is with, and then initiare, which is to initiate, like as a priest or as a member of a community, was from that early time. So I thought, oh my gosh, of course, it's on then. And it's not. Kathy is right.
Mm-mm. Huh.
You had referred to convocation, and that's another aspect of the graduation ceremony. It's the formal in-person ceremony.
As soon as I said it, I was afraid you were going to ask me about this word.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. You were right. So that's you wear your like your cool little gown, that hood that some people get or whatever. Mm-hmm. You walk across the stage. They said it's particularly North American.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. We didn't know that either. This was no. We knew that you would know the origin is interesting too, because it's again, it's, you know, Wakare, vocal calling together, mm-hmm. which is what it, okay. it refers to.
Okay.
It's also convocation. It's also a collective noun for
a convocation.
Eagles.
Oh, okay.
A convocation of eagles, beagles, convocation of beagles, or baboons. A convocation of baboons.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this will almost certainly be wrong. But as soon as you said baboons, some little tiny bell went off in my head that said, maybe I've heard that before. I'm going to go with baboons, a convocation of baboons.
What did you initially think?
I thought eagles sounded pretty good, frankly.
Yeah, you were right.
Okay.
I'm surprised you didn't go for beagles, for heaven's sake. Well,
the only reason I didn't go for beagles is because it rhymed with eagles, so I figured that was the
trick. The only reason we came up with that. Yeah, no, it's a convocation of bald. It's actually used more specifically for bald eagles,
okay.
more than any other kind of eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite know why it's called a convocation.
Oh, just because it sounds important, probably.
Yeah, well, they also call it a soar, an eerie, or a spread.
Yeah.
A spread of eagles spread doesn't of eagles. Work
yeah,
for me.
No, a convocation is no. good. A soar of eagles, obviously. That's good. Well, so what's the collective noun for baboons?
Actually, I'm going to ask you guys a bird-related one. What's the collective noun for ducks?
Waddle.
I've heard...
A waddle
a
of ducks. A brace of
ducks. Oh, a brace of ducks.
But is that alive? Are those live ducks? Because I thought a brace of ducks is when you go shooting and you bring them home.
I thought
bed.
So, too. Yeah. I just looked it up. I thought so, too. It's a traditional hunting and wildlife term that refers specifically to two ducks.
Two ducks. That makes sense.
Depending on whether the birds are flying, swimming, or gathered together, collective noun changes. On land, a pair of ducks is called a brace. Fletcher, you got it right. Larger grounded groups are called a waddling or a flock.
Uh-huh.
A waddling?
Yeah, I call a lot of ducks or a bunch of ducks. I think it's easier.
A group. We had duck for dinner last night. It was very good. Ooh, yeah.
You had a brace of ducks or just one duck?
Uno. Okay, baboons is a troop.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. actually.
Yeah.
They say you sometimes see them referred to as a congress or a flange, but troop is the standard term used by biologists and primatologists.
Okay. All right.
Okay, now, Fletcher,
flange?
You're a big... I really think those collective things just are dumb at this
well,
point.
Well, I mean, they're all, you know, they're all
they're
just
fun.
For fun. That's all it is, yeah.
All right, Fletcher, I'm going to ask you one quick question. Convocation, we talked about, there's a place in Toronto, the University of Toronto, which is my stomping grounds, mm-hmm. called Convocation Hall, which is a large hall where graduates come together and they're, you know, graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Convocation Hall is really well known if you know anything about film. A lot of films have been shot in, University of Toronto is huge for film. Everything is shot there.
Yeah.
But Convocation Hall specifically has appeared in, let's see if you can name two films it's appeared in.
Oh, goodness gracious. When did people start shooting so much in Toronto, I wonder? We're looking for a big hall. The only ones I can think of are, I feel like, too old to have been shot in Toronto, because people didn't start shooting in Toronto till it became really way cheaper to shoot in Toronto, right?
Yeah. Really cheaper, yeah.
Yeah.
It's also less crowded in New York, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, you got to tell me. I mean, I feel embarrassed,
okay.
Or at least give me a hint.
Have you seen, a Mathletes Championship scene for high school students?
Oh.
Lindsay Lohan.
Is this Mean Girls?
Yes.
Oh, see, I've only seen Mean Girls once. I'm sorry to everybody out there. All of you who are angry.
I never
with me.
Saw it.
Oh, yeah.
I never saw it. So
I've seen it.
Worry.
I really liked it. I really thought it was good.
Yeah,
I was surprised.
I liked it too. Yeah. Good movie.
Okay. The Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
Inconvenient Truth. TV shows Fringe, Orphan Black, Warehouse, and Nikita. All of them use it.
Wow, good. I do feel better because there weren't any like huge set pieces in any of those. You know, it wasn't like, what is it, The Man Who Knew Too Much in the big theater scene.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. I was stunned at how much Toronto, University of Toronto has appeared in films, though. I didn't really realize it. Like Moonstruck, which I always liked, is like almost all, you know, filmed at the University of Toronto, which is weird. I didn't realize it. I didn't see it until I looked at the film. I go, oh, yeah, I know that area. So, that's not Brooklyn.
Well, that was one of the things that always drives me crazy. Like when you're supposed to be New York and you're like, oh, please, this is not New York.
I know. I know. The cabs really always get me. A lot of films have wrong cabs for New York City, which we well know. So
let me ask you something. So, Kathy, you lived in New York. Gross, did you live in this New York City?
I was Hoboken. I used to go to New York every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wonder, I always want, okay, so like if a movie were shot in Wichita, like a major motion picture, then whenever, if I were to watch it, I would be pointing at all the things saying, oh, I know that place. Oh, I've been there. Mm-hmm. You know, blah, blah, blah. Does that happen for people from New York City?
Oh, sure.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Definitely. Okay. Especially for me, having left New York, I sometimes get homesick. Like we were, I forget what we were watching. And I was like, oh, God, you know.
Although what still gets me, though, is like I really love Moonstruck. And I really, and a really good friend of mine was in Brooklyn. We almost moved to Brooklyn from, I mean, Hoboken's right across the river. So we, you know, and I almost went to move. We looked at a house in Cobble Hill and all that, and I really didn't realize that most of it wasn't shot there. That was a real shock to me.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times the other thing is you think you recognize something, you're wrong. So hey, that's Sixth Ave. No, it isn't. You know, it's Bloor Street in Toronto. What happened? Yeah. Okay, new word here. Diploma.
Oh, yeah.
Came from the Latin word meaning completion. A Latin word meaning full, or Latin word meaning fold.
Ooh. The only one that feels right just because of that die part is fold. Like there are two parts, right?
Brilliant. You got it. That one really sort of gets me because, I mean, when you're asked, what does that mean? You can figure it out. But if you just said it like, automatically fold. Why fold? It's a weird thing.
I mean, I guess, I mean, was a diploma folded in two parts?
You got it.
Okay.
You got it. And it was originally from, oddly enough, diplomat. The idea of diplomat came first before diploma.
Oh my gosh. It was, I've never until this moment thought of diplomat and diploma as being like related.
Isn't it something? Yeah. Cause I wouldn't have either. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because it was a letter of recommendation, right?
Yeah. Folded over state letter of recommendation.
Oh, my gosh. Huh.
Although now, aren't diplomas usually rolled or mailed to you, like, you know, months later?
Usually they're mailed to you months later.
Yeah. You have to go pick. Actually, I think you have to go pick it up at the office and probably pay them for it.
I don't even remember how I got my diploma. Do you guys? I don't remember it at all. I
graduated early, so they just sent it to me because I didn't attend anything. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't. I'll be honest. I didn't attend either of my college graduations.
Mm-hmm.
One time, I slept on the couch and watched baseball. And I can't remember the second time.
Okay. Well, next graduation word. What is the difference? The word is valedictorian. Okay. And we're going to ask you, what's the difference between a valedictorian, a salutatorian, and a centurion?
I really like that last one. You added that one in, didn't you, Ken? That was good.
The centurion is the Roman soldier or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't ask me to be more specific than that on that one. A valedictorian is the person who's the top of the class, right? Is it salutatorian? Is that what you said? Why do I always read that as salutatorian?
You're right. It's salutatorian.
Oh, it is. Salutatorian.
I was going to say, Kath. Yeah. I just saw that myself. Like, what are you talking
about? I spelled it incorrectly. I'm spelling it wrong.
I don't know. I always figured that was like the person who was second in class, and they also
you
got
bought it.
Oh, it is. Okay.
You got it. Yep. So, and interestingly enough, usually the Valedictorian comes second in terms of making a speech.
Oh, that makes sense. What if there's a tie for valedictorian? Do they have a salutatorian, or do they just forego that? It probably depends, right, on whether they really want to get more people involved.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they do. I don't have no idea.
Yeah. I thought a lot of times you see joint valedictorians, so I assume you must still have the salutatorian.
Or maybe you call a centurion in to kill one of them. I don't know.
Settle this dispute. Yeah.
Sword.
I suppose we have plenty of academics listening to us. You can tell us what happens at these ceremonies that I didn't attend.
Nor did I. So, Russ, did you attend yours? You did.
I don't remember it, though.
I remember it at our wars. So, yeah, we went.
That's interesting. I don't remember it at all. But
yeah.
Okay, just one quick thing, Fletcher. What is the valedictorian, what is the word related to? Do you know?
No, I guess I don't.
Sort of an interesting etymology. It comes, you know how when the Romans would greet you or say goodbye, I think if you ever watch Roman film, this of vale or vale?
Yeah, sure.
That be well, that tends to mean.
Okay.
Okay, so it comes from there. In ancient Rome, the V would have pronounced wa. But anyway, so then vale, and then other part of the word comes from dicere, which is to say. So you're basically to say or to show. You're basically showing you're well. You are the most fit of the group it comes from.
Wow. Okay.
I have a question for you, Ross, actually, and I never thought of it. In Spain, you say vale all the time. Vale, vale is okay.
Yeah,
you go,
sure.
Someone goes, what are you doing? Vale. But, I mean, so is that from be well, be strong?
I'm sure.
I never thought of it. I run around going, vale, vale. And I was like, when we first moved here, I was like, why the hell are these people like, we were about to die salute you or something. Everybody was going, vale. I didn't get it. Now I use it.
Okay, here's how it goes. It does come from the Latin valere, or valere in this case. And vale literally transforms to be well or farewell. And then from Spain, it just began to form valer, I guess, in Spain. And then it was used as for documents to say these documents are authentic or valid.
Oh, interesting.
And then from valid, it
we now use it just okay. As okay. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. That really is interesting for me right now. We got a document from, I don't know Spain too well, Murcia, Kath, or Murcia, how you pronounce it, from the 1500s.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of ours translated it because it's an old Spanish and stuff.
Mm.
And it's really interesting because what it is just that. It's a document that says basically everything is okay. This person was investigated by the Spanish Inquisition and he needed to get like this sort of certificate showing, you know, he's not like a heretical Muslim or Jew.
God.
It's really weird. It's scary.
That's amazing.
Really.
Yeah.
And he to prove that he and his descendants can now, they're now validated. Because I think it did have a valet in there, which is really interesting. Sort of
wow, that's fascinating. Okay, yeah. Very interesting. Thank you. That's very interesting.
That's interesting that you brought it up, though. The etymology is interesting, too, for how words change in different languages. When you said okay.
Yeah, because it's a throwaway. You just go valet, valet. I mean, Randy and I joke about it. We walk into the street and you hear it's a three valet response. And we say, yeah, valet, valet, valet. And they're going like, yeah, you know. Get out of here, whatever.
And the dangers of not knowing, because I would go there and go like, why are they saying be well, be well, be well?
You know what I mean? Really?
What's wrong with them? Oh yeah, this will throw in. Okay, while we're at it, Fletcher, what's the difference between summa cum laude, magna cum laude, or cum laude?
I can never remember which is which. Is magna the highest honors? Summa is the highest honors, maybe? Okay.
You've hit both now.
Thanks, Kathy. Yes, I can never remember which is which. So summa is with the highest honors and magna is with big honors. And then...
Right, you got it. For some reason, summa sounds, to me, as a kid, before I learned Latin, magna sounds bigger than
magna
summa.
Magna sounds cooler than summa.
But I think we already have an idea that magna is big. Like, we get that from other places. So it makes sense that would sound bigger if you didn't know Latin.
And summa is the summit. So whatever, we can do it that way.
But it doesn't sound as cool. Magna, it's like, magna.
I know, I agree with you. I like magna better.
They didn't call it the summa carta, did they?
Yeah.
Okay, this is one that actually fascinated me.
You bet it.
You know that hat that they wear when they graduate?
Yeah, the mortar board or whatever they call it.
Yeah. It's a mortar board. Why is it called a mortar board, Fletcher?
Oh my gosh.
Ross and I now know, but do you?
I guess I have periodically wondered why they would call it a mortar board. How would I possibly know this?
Just think a little bit, like, mortar board.
A board that you put mortar on so that you can, I mean, that's all it is. It's a flat thing that you would put mortar on, and oh, it looks like that flat thing.
Yep.
Is that it?
That's it.
I mean, there are lots of flat things in the world, though. Why a mortar board?
If you look into this, as Ross and I did, there's a very lengthy explanation of why mortar board. The bottom line is they say that the original thing, first of all, they said that it came from the Roman Catholic links in the universities in Italy. Correct, Ross? I'm skimming very quickly.
Yeah.
Because they were learning Latin. And so the initial design for the mortar board came from the Berettas. But this is what doesn't make sense to me. The hats that Roman Catholic clergymen wore. Berettas are tall and round. Mortarboard is like a flat square, right?
The fact that people are building stuff with a mortarboard, could it be the bowl first is round that you're using to mix the mortar?
Well, it became called a mortarboard because it resembled a mason's board. And that was only in the 1800s. Huh. So the beginning is just like, I don't quite understand how it went from a round thing to a flat thing. They say it's because students thought it was more comfortable and easier to wear. It's like,
I mean, that's probably true. still not super easy to wear or comfortable, but maybe more so.
Although, could it also be because the little cap part you wear under the board, could that cap be the mortar?
Well, the mortar is not evolved. No, you don't understand, Ross. The mortar part, the mortar board aspect of it didn't come about till the 1800s, and people said, hey, that looks a lot like Mason's board. So the cap and the board part don't have anything to do with Mason's until the 1800s.
Ah, okay. So then the cap itself, it looks like a
It doesn't
a
matter what it looks like.
What I'm saying though is maybe the flat thing came later. Maybe the term mortar first came to be used for the cap. Then just hear me out for 1 second. So maybe I'm really wrong here. But then for some reason they shoved a flat thing on top, and that's when it became a border with the board, and it became mortar board.
Okay, but they say it came from the French mortier. What does mortier mean?
Mortier is
mortar.
It's building's mortar. Builder's mortar. And it's a bowl. The mortier was old French, was literally a bowl. So I'm saying mortar came from the
cap. I think you're making sense now. And then it became the mortar board because they added the flat thing on top for some reason.
Right. For some reason, which we're not going to go into because it has nothing to do with words. It's a board.
We no longer care either.
Right. Okay, I think we're almost done. Let's just do one last one, Fletcher.
Okay.
We've talked about this before, and we want you to explain when you've graduated, you're called an alum for short.
Oh, sure.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
But we have different words for all of these types of people. Some are male and some are female in the old gender distinction that we're doing here. A male alum, and what is that a male alum technically called? And what's a female alum technically called? And what's the plural for all
right.
of these?
Alumnus for male. Alumna
right.
for female.
Very good.
Alumni for all male or mixed.
Okay. That's an American or a standard pronunciation. Latin would be a different pronunciation, but keep going.
Okay. And then is all female alumni?
It would be, how do you pronounce it in English, Kath? I do it in Latin, which means alumni with an A-E ending.
Oh, yeah.
You would say alumni.
Yeah, I think I typically say that as E, even though, yes, you're right, it would be I.
Because in American English, it's like Aegis, A-E-G-I-S.
Yeah.
But we've all agreed that this is pretty much of a dead concept at this point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I do still see it. People do seem to stick to it a little more than you might think, at least with women. I mean, I see alumna sometimes. I never see alumnus. In fact, I see sometimes I see alumni as singular as well. But we do often just see alum, don't we? And I think that's probably so that people don't have to remember all of those, or so that we can intentionally forget them all, because who cares, right?
I know.
I think we should just say graduate.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.